Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast. I'm Matt Cos. That's Bob Mackowitz. Hey Bob, how was your commute?
So as I was saying, I think it's so funny. My commute was great, actually.
Good.
Only one bus to subway our streetcar transfer.
Yep. Only one. That's good.
Now, if I had continued on, I would have had to jump off. They were just announcing it was short turning just as we were at my stop. So,
okay. And I know we're going to discuss why it's been ages since we've done this and so much to get into. And you have projects. I do not. But short turn, it's so vague. It's like, and you just see it on the streetcar. It says, Queen or King, short turn. It's like, what does that mean? Where are you going? Like, can you give us some information?
It's like code for disappointment. We will disappoint you.
You don't know when, but it's coming.
You know how, but you don't know when. I think it's funny that I showed up and here we are in person and it's beautiful to see you again.
Yep.
I still can't drive and you still have your Acer laptop.
Nothing changes.
Honestly,
nothing changes.
We walked back into a Norman Rockwell painting.
Yeah. Have you been here since we changed my floor? I think you were here once since we did all the renos. You know what?
The renos look great, and this is the least stuff-filled your place has ever been. I guess there's no holidays right now.
There's no Christmas. There's no Halloween. Basically, between now and October 1st, the place is gloriously minimal. How I love it.
How so old? Like Valentine's Day. It's nothing. Past. Nothing. Yeah. See, that's interesting. How long you've been with your partner is, you can tell, it's like counting the rings of a tree.
Yeah.
How long you've been with them is how seriously you take Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Also, Amy was, she was in Africa. Ooh. So she was at her school in Mombasa. First time going there since COVID. And it was inspiring. Like, it was great. Like, it was a perfect case scenario. So you know what I did while she was away? Ho, ho, ho. When the lady's away, the man, he will... Well, I bought shrimp because she doesn't like seafood, and I drank Sauvignon Blanc. It's her least favorite of the white grapes. So I had a night of True Detective, shrimp, and Sauvignon Blanc. That's what I do when the lady is away.
So that's Matt Cos's version of an affair.
That's right.
2024 is I'm going to watch a show
yeah.
that you probably wouldn't like with a wine you probably wouldn't drink
yep.
and a food you definitely wouldn't eat.
Yeah, it was great.
Well, that's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to do today's pod. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, where do we start? Because we haven't talked in probably
months.
3 months.
Yeah.
And lots has happened. Too much to try and recap. So I wanted to do this as I have three questions for you. One about the Leafs, one about the Raptors, and then one about sports in general.
Yep.
And I think if you answer these questions and we converse,
we'll
get caught up.
I like it. By the way, though, I am annoyed because you were saying you're working on so many different projects, but you're working on a project you can't discuss.
I can't
right?
discuss it yet. It's close to entering our universe, but I never like to talk about anything until it's started.
That's not the source of my frustration. That's fine. It totally makes sense. What annoys me is everything goes back to me and how everything impacts me.
It annoys me too.
Yeah. I've never in my life had something I couldn't talk about. Oh, I'm working on something. You know, like at a cocktail party. Oh, what are you working on? I can't talk about it. I've never been that important. I've never been that mysterious. I can always talk about everything all the time because I've never had anything where it's like, oh no, we have to keep this under wraps. I've always wanted that.
So it's a project with George. And it's something we've been meaning to do for a long time. And we're just going to do it. I am the opposite of LA. He is now LA. In LA, if you have something on the go, but it hasn't started yet, all you do is talk about it.
Yeah.
That's all you do to anybody who will listen and even people who won't.
Yeah.
In Toronto, the response is, I've got something cooking, but I can't talk about it. We are humble and guarded to a fault while they are just obnoxious. And in the middle must be the truth.
I want to be LA. Like just, there's a couple of things. Just once, I want to have some cool project that I can't talk about. Also, I wanted to be flown somewhere for work. I've always wanted to say the sentence, oh yeah, I'm going to Zurich. I'm not going to be able to spend any time there. I'm there on work.
You did get flown to Calgary to do the commercial.
I did get flown to Calgary, and I once got flown to Pittsburgh to cover the NHL draft.
Ooh.
Yes.
Well, me too.
Money
actually.
Not well spent.
draft analyst Matt Cos.
That's me and Mike Richards. The show ended with these two girls who were a local acoustic band who we said the night before, if you want to come and perform on our show for our NHL draft preview show, they showed up. I didn't think they would. And here's the best part, Bob. They sung an original song. So the Toronto audience, they didn't do the hits. So if you're a Toronto audience, listen to the Mike Richards show that we were flown to Pittsburgh to cover the draft. The show ends with two girls you've never heard of singing a song you've never heard of.
I was watching Toronto sports all the time because I was on that trip too.
Yeah.
And so I could talk about the Leafs all day long, but I don't know fuck all about the OHL.
Yeah.
So the night before, and then Cebulski goes home because his kid's having a birthday party, and our program director at the time, Rob Gray, says, I'd like you to do a Saturday show. So I had a 4-hour draft special the next day, the day after going off over the picks, right? And while the draft is going on through the next successive rounds. So the night before, I just call Merrick and I'm like, who the fuck is Radek Faksa?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm writing down notes like crazy. I'm like, who's the steal of the draft? He goes, he probably is. Okay. And next day, of course, oh man, Dallas has got a winner. The Stars picked up Radek Faksa out of Kitchener and
sure.
the Rangers. And, you know, he's got, and you're lying.
You're lying.
You're
totally
just lying.
Yeah.
And I don't regret it. And did it work? I don't know. But it got to air and nobody complained.
And I had an acoustic song. Anyway, let's get to...
All right, so here's the questions.
Yeah.
First one is about the Leafs. They are as confusing as ever.
Yep.
They are as bipolar as ever.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to talk about them every day.
Yep.
Probably lots. How do we talk about the Leafs in February of 2024?
I think the way I'm doing it today, I am embracing the mystery of who this team is. And how I broke it down was I looked at what was the line combinations in game one in early October against Montreal. Then I looked at it, what was the line combinations against Winnipeg before the All-Star break versus what last night was in that glorious 7-3 win over Vegas. And the changes. You know, at the start of the year, Max Domi was a second-line winger, and William Nylander may get $9 million in his next contract. Bobby McMahon didn't exist. Matthews' over-under was maybe like 49.5 goals.
We actually discussed the possibility of a kid line with Matthew Nyes and Minton on it.
Exactly. Frazier Minton. There he was. And now
it was exciting. And yeah. Is he going to stick 9 games, or will he play 40? Will he make the whole season? Boy, it would be great to have a kid line again.
I tell you, at the beginning of the year, someone's going to be suspended for 5 games on the Maple Leafs. You're probably guessing Ryan Reeves, not Morgan Riley. And then the defense plays better without him. And then Morgan Riley comes back. And who does he look good with? A guy named William Lagesson. Because you can't play him with TJ Brody, because TJ Brody is doing well with Timothy Liljegren, because McCabe and Simon Benoit have looked really steady. So I am embracing how no one knows what the fuck is going on with this team, except for a couple things. We know Matthews is going to score. Marner's going to do Marner things. Nylander is well compensated. Bobby McMahon is the feel-good story of this team. And everything else, I don't know.
It was the Greek philosopher Heraclitus, I believe, who once said that never the same river twice. And I think what he meant by that is things are constantly evolving, constantly changing. You can look at the river, but the river is constantly moving. It is never the same river twice. That's the Leafs in a nutshell. And really, it's almost like who shows up.
Yeah.
This has been true for a while, and it's true this year as well. So with last night's 7 goals, they're now at 3.68 goals per game, which is number 1 in the NHL. And you'd think, oh, well, they must be great then. They're the highest scoring team in the NHL, and goals are so important.
Yeah.
So they must be great. But no.
They're ninth.
They're third in their division.
Yep. And they're ninth in points percentage.
Right.
Yep.
You know, and then you go, well, oh, geez, how many do they give up? And you go, oh, they give up 3.13 goals per game. That's 18th. Well, that would put them in the bottom half. That's not as good. Okay. All right. Well, their power play is incredible. They're second in the league. They're hitting at 28.4%. That's incredible. Ooh, the PK, 77.6. 22nd in the league. So it's almost like, and the other stat that I just kind of love, and I don't have the exact percentage, but their top 4 players score.
60%. A little while ago. That's probably gone down to 57.
But more importantly, that's so much higher than the rest of the league.
Yeah.
So it literally does come down to how do we talk about them the way we've been freaking talking about them for 5 years.
Yep.
As the core four goes, so go the Leafs. And it's astonishing that you, as a professional, can find literally, I would guess, probably about 1,200 shows that are basically the same topic. What are we going to do with the core four? Are they good? Are they not good?
First off, we had it down for you doing some sort of French literature as as your first douchebag reference, but you went went Greek philosopher. Yeah. I like that. Okay, you went off the board.
Well, I did promise to talk about food.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh, we'll get to that in a second. By the way, Greek food, a little overrated, but save that.
Wait.
Yeah.
No, we won't.
Greek food's
amazing.
Greek food is always good. It's not great. Greek food doesn't have... Greek food, high floor, low ceiling.
See, here's the thing is, this is the version of Greek food where people go, I love Chinese food. Chicken balls are amazing and that sauce is so good.
I've been to Greece. Boom. Checkmate. It's, you know what? I enjoy it.
I should shut up then.
Yeah, exactly.
There's so much seafood. I love seafood.
Okay, the seafood, you're right. The seafood element of Greece, high ceiling. But anything that comes from the land, it's good. You know, it's Jake McCabe right now. It's solid, but it's not a high ceiling.
When you dropped, I've been to Greece.
Yeah. Now,
ordinarily, what I would do is ramp up my argument twice as hard, maybe call you a Nazi in an attempt to like stave off my inevitable defeat.
Yeah.
I feel like in the last 3 months, I must have matured because I was like, you know what? You know more than I do.
Hooray.
I've been to Mr. Greek. You've been to Greece.
I've also been to Mr. Greek. I was saying, though, that the we were running out of ways of talking about, because there's always something. There was Nylander, and he's great in his contract.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Matthews. And I found a way to talk about Auston Matthews, a new way to look how good he is.
Me too. You go first.
Auston Matthews is so good that going into the game last night, he almost makes us forget how big the gap is between who the Leafs are today and who Vegas was when they beat Florida in five to win the Stanley Cup, because we're so amazed, rightfully so, by what Matthews is doing, it almost makes you forget, oh, wait a minute, they had depth scoring and their smallest defenseman on the Knights is the size of Morgan Riley.
He's fifth all time on the list right now for most goals scored 5-on-5 in a first 8 seasons of any, like, it's Gretzky, it's Bossy, there are a couple other guys up there. In the modern era, what he's doing is phenomenal. I thought about this, and I think you'll appreciate this, because Auston Matthews is playing so well.
Yeah.
And we've seen him do this before, and he's so exciting that in some ways we almost don't know how to discuss it, because there's also something where we don't go, oh, well, he's just given the Hart Trophy. He's number one in goals, number six in points. In theory, like, we should have a much more rigorous Hart Trophy debate. But I think people know in their gut, well, there's other good players too. Even though, statistically, this is a historic season. And here's the distinction. I think that right now, Auston Matthews is the best player in the NHL, but not the greatest. And here's the difference. At any given time, there's probably a handful of people, you know, 5-10 players, whatever, who could be the best. Like, they are playing the best hockey right now. But we also know that that's a little bit transient. It's a bit transitory, right? It could be David Pastrnak's playing the best right now. It could be Cale Makar. Do you see what he's doing? He's playing the best. It might be a goalie who's super hot. And you go, there is nobody better on planet Earth than that person right now. But it might not be true in a month. See, we've seen him go through goal droughts.
Yeah.
Not a lot this year, but we've seen it before. And during those droughts, you don't go, well, that's the best player in the world. And I think what you have to do is be the best player enough times over the course of, like, say, 3 or 4 or 5 years that you stitch all of those moments together and you have the narrative of the greatest player. For example, Connor McDavid is probably the greatest player in the world right now.
Correct.
At any given moment, Matthews might be playing a little better than him. Connor has reached that height so many times in so many different ways that you go, if I had to identify one player that exemplifies what a hockey player is, I'd give it to him. It was Sidney Crosby before that. For example, in basketball, Kobe was not always the best player in the NBA.
Nope.
But we knew he was the greatest.
Mm-hmm.
Because he could be the best player enough times that we would have to say there's nobody better.
Yeah,
benefit. Even when somebody was playing better.
Benefit of the doubt. It's like, okay, there's enough proof of concept.
There's only one way to become the greatest player, and it's win.
Yeah.
It's funny because Connor isn't even really the greatest player yet, is he?
No,
but Nathan MacKinnon pushes him all the time because Nathan MacKinnon has won. And this is where hockey becomes so frustrating because one player influences victory less in hockey than in basketball or in football and even baseball. Pitchers in a World Series can throw three times.
I mean, yeah.
But generally speaking, you know, if the Jays make the World Series, like Vladdy Guerrero could hit 500, there's still only so much he can do. He can't beat a team. Hockey's a bit more like that, but Austin is winning away from being the greatest.
It's funny. It's almost like you were saying about how do you talk about the Maple Leafs. 2 days ago, my opening thought was the main thing hurting Austin Matthews from winning the Hart is he doesn't have a Conn Smythe. Mm-hmm. Connor McDavid has like 30 plus more points in one fewer playoff game than Austin Matthews. Austin Matthews is scores well under a point per game in the playoffs. And look at the other guys for the Hart. Kucherov, he's won a couple cups. He's had a great run. MacKinnon led Colorado in goals and helped lead them to a Stanley Cup. McDavid hasn't, but McDavid's gone further in the playoffs. He's gone to Western Conference Finals, and McDavid has gone more captain caveman in playoff series than Matthews.
So, and I think I know the answer to the question, but I'm asking it to prove the point. Would you rather have Austin Matthews win the Hart and the Rocket Richard this year, but have the Leafs lose in the first round, or have Matthews fall short in his individual goals and have the Leafs make it to at least the second round?
Oh, door number two every time.
But like by a country mile.
I was gonna already give the answer, but I didn't want to be rude and interrupt. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you've grown up too. Mm.
Yeah, I'm still waiting.
Although this was an opportunity to talk about yourself because at the end of it, you pointed out how you didn't do it.
I did find a way to praise myself. Yeah. I do have a high praise per game ratio, you know.
You Nazi.
Yes, that's right.
I haven't grown up either.
Yeah.
So we know in our hearts, like even though this season is amazing and it's a joy to watch the guy play, but it doesn't matter. And ultimately, we don't care that much.
I think it also goes to the you know, one of the existential questions. I don't even know if it's existential, just sounds smarter when you say existential. But how difficult is it for the Leaf fan to separate, to just be in the moment and enjoy what you just saw? Like, you know, like a Matthews hat trick and just enjoying even a puck going off his shoulder and into the net for goal number 51 against Anaheim. Finding joy and ignoring it. Like, can you... The ability to compartmentalize, you know, like as a human, if you watch the news for 12 minutes and try to emotionally ingest everything you see, you'll be in a corner in the fetal position filled with terror and sympathy for what's going on, but you still got to go shopping and you got to go visit your parents and raise a kid. It's same thing with hockey. You need to find joy in that regular season game instead of harping over the fact that the Leafs scored 10 goals in five games against the Panthers.
Willie Nylander yesterday hit 30 goals, which makes it now three consecutive seasons of hitting 30 goals. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Mitch Marner, excuse me, is 12th in the league in points, I think, which gives the Leafs three players in the top 12 when it comes to scoring, like overall point totals. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But and it should promote joy in the moment. Here's the problem, though. They also score so much that nobody else does. And so they're number one in goals, but it doesn't matter because they don't win all the time, even though they're number one in goals. The joys are the same. The problems are the same. And really, this speaks to just sports in North America right now, which is there's a regular season problem.
Yeah.
It's just really hard to pay attention. You know, the trade deadline gives you a spike of interest. All-star game a little bit.
Non-basketball.
God, the worst. I watched 4 minutes on the treadmill and just walked off.
Yeah. Yes, there is. I think the NBA has it far worse than the NHL for a regular season problem. Just because NHL players, maybe they're all lying, but the care factor is higher. But that, I mean, that, you know, that's another topic.
So I think you've answered this pretty well, which is you have to embrace the rate of change on the Leafs, because in the end, all that matters is where did they start and where they wind up to start the playoffs.
Yeah. And can Bobby McMahon and Max Domi be this in the playoffs? Can Domi or Tyler Bertuzzi, can they be the Chandler Stephenson and William Karlsson of Vegas last year? Like, you know, the one thing they're not going to fix, they're not going to be a big behemoth defense. You're not going to fix that at the deadline. There's more than one way to win, but can there be enough depth guys to carry you when the shooting percentage goes low for the core four over three games in a playoff series?
I think in some ways the size of the defense is an issue, but more importantly, the Leafs aren't great at puck recovery in their own zone, and it seems like that is the key for your defense in the playoffs. Hockey's really funny this way because we also know that the number one goal scoring offense like doesn't translate necessarily that well to the playoffs.
Yep.
It becomes so much more defensive and so much more about, and I was astonished. I texted a friend of mine how not only are we talking about the same problems, we're talking about the same solutions to them. Like Chris Tanev, I remember talking to Cebulski about should the Leafs get Chris Tanev. That was 10 years ago. Colton Parayko's name has come up. Ooh. I remember when you and I were on the air together saying, oh, they should probably get Colton Parayko. That was 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, it is. It is the same thing over and over.
With the same names.
I know. It's a spiral you down some sort of nihilistic sort of... If they had just beaten Montreal in the goddamn COVID year...
That was it.
Damn it.
All right.
Stupid Corey Perry.
All right. So do you want to do Raptors question, general question, or a food related dot, dot, dot?
Let's do a food related dot, dot, dot. We will get back in. I know it's predictable. We'll get back into sports.
All right. So these questions are all kind of sporty, but all food themed. Bruce Bowen is the kombu in the ramen broth of the Raptors. Is intermittent fast. Oh, sorry. Dot, dot, dot. Is intermittent fasting just skipping breakfast? Discuss. Dot, dot, dot. And Ben Simmons, and this is a question I asked you once before, and I want to revisit. Will Ben Simmons be on more all-NBA teams by the end of his career than Zion Williamson will be on his?
Well, the third one...
That's food-related only because I think food will probably determine that answer.
For Zion Williamson, yes, absolutely. First off, I did tell everyone bet under 7.5 points for Ben Simmons. He had two last night in the Raptors win over the Nets. That was about as easy as it gets. Intermittent fasting.
Okay,
is
intermittent fasting just skipping breakfast? Discuss.
Yes. Intermittent fasting is how long can I go before I eat this sandwich at lunchtime?
Mm-hmm.
That's really what intermittent fasting, like the beauty of intermittent fasting is it feels like this is a path to health. But I'm allowed to be lazy. I am allowed to be lazy and healthy all at once, which is the secret sauce. It's why you see these commercials for these pills that they don't tell you what they do, like Ozempic, or there's some other one now. And it's like, oh, just take this pill. And we know there'll be bad side effects and muscle retention issues. But anyway, yes, intermittent fasting is I'm going to avoid breakfast. And can I wait till after Price is Right before I start to have lunch?
This friend of mine is saying, because I'm doing it right now, I had to drop a little bit of weight, which is Zion Williams-esque of me.
Or talking to the Toronto Maple Leafs, it's the same thing, you know? Same name, same topics.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, Bob's on the I'm going to lose the weight of the arc now. And, so a friend of mine says, so basically you skip breakfast.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, it's not that. But I couldn't explain why it wasn't that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, after a while, yeah, I skip breakfast.
Yeah. And ooh, it's always like, I now have this heavy cream in my coffee, or I have goat butter. It's always do your best not to eat, but put a whole lot of aggressive dairy in your coffee, and boom, there you go.
With MCT oil.
Yes.
So here's what I've learned, Matt.
Yeah.
Because for years, you and I grew up hearing that the number one sin you could commit for health and diet was skipping breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
It's the most important meal of the day.
Yes.
And all those people now are saying, if you want to be healthy, skip breakfast.
Yeah, I know. It's such bullshit.
It's all bullshit, Matt.
In the end, to quote Adam Carolla, there are no shortcuts when it comes to nature. There are no shortcuts. We all know the answers. We just don't want to do the answers. Like
eat less, exercise more.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know when I had to have my hernia surgery, the doctor said, okay, we can do it whenever. But if you lose 15 pounds, it just makes it easier. I'm like, okay. So I had a single tear as I waved goodbye to my wine fridge, and it was no grain, no sugar, no booze. And then the weight goes bye-bye. I'm miserable, but that's how you do it. And I've heard intermittent fasting. It makes sense. But intermittent fasting also requires You kind of have to stop eating probably by 6, 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
And, you know, I mean, you're European. I mean, come on. I mean, meals, a lot of times meals are supposed to be consumed after the sun sets.
I said to Sandra, if you're new to the pod, that's my wife. I haven't been on in a while. You might be totally new to the pod. I said to her, what are you going to do when I look good? She goes, I've got time to think about it.
Oh, God, that's such a good line.
And it was seamless, too.
Oh, that's such a good line. Yeah, I also feel guilty when I look at Amy and then I look at me. I mean, it's not Homer Simpson, Marge Simpson, but, you know, she's a double black belt and I have a black belt and it's fraying a little bit.
I want to bring up the Zion Williamson thing a little bit, because when he came into the league, we felt like he could be the next Larry Johnson.
Yeah.
Just this really big, overpowering forward that's a thrill to watch and kind of an unstoppable tank. And there's something so exciting in sports about a physical anomaly. Mm-hmm. In a league full of people who are giants, he is a battering ram.
It's why we love. It's why you can't take your eyes off of Victor Wembanyama. You're like, what the hell is that thing?
And yet it's always so frustrating when someone is born with those incredible gifts and they piss them away. But one of the reasons why I actually think Ben Simmons will be on more all NBA teams than Zion Williamson, which would be one for Ben, none for Zion, mm-hmm. isn't that Zion might not turn it around, but it's that the league is so stocked with talent right now. Young talent, the great older players are still playing at an incredible high level. Like, he has to be to make the team, he's got to do it at forward. You know, assuming Luka Doncic is a forward, like, we could sit here and create a list of 10 players that would go in any given year. Even Scottie Barnes, I would give a better chance to be an all-NBA player, just as Pascal Siakam was.
Yeah.
Before Zion, because Zion gets hurt all the time and doesn't seem to want it more than anything else, and the league is so packed with talent. To go back to the thing about the Leafs, you almost don't even need to watch the games. You just need TikTok and NBA.com for your highlights. And until the games actually mean something, I am happy watching 4-minute Wemby packs where he does crazy shit than spending 2.5 hours to try and watch those same 4 clips.
I'm somewhere in between. If I'm busy, what I like to do, last 7 minutes if it's a close game. And then I really watch the shit out of that.
Honestly, the NBA.com alert that says close game alert.
Yeah.
3 points in the fourth quarter. I love that because I know, okay, that's worth watching.
By the way, if you're Zion.
Yeah.
Like, you have to think about this. Dude, you have a chance to be a face of the league guy. LeBron is old. Steph is old. Tatum hasn't won it yet. Jokic is not going to be, has no interest in it. It could be Giannis, but you're also an American-born player. You had a year at Duke, which means there's even more people who know who you are. And as of right now, he's kind of pissed it away.
1-2 in that draft year were Zion and Ja Morant. And both of them felt like they could be the faces of the league, and both of them seemed to be pissing it away. But Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has stepped up.
Can a Canadian be the face of the NBA? Can a Canadian playing for the Oklahoma City Thunder will, because to be the face of the league,
I think yes, because we now live in a post Giannis world. It didn't happen when Steve Nash was back to back. When was he back to back?
Yeah, back to back. Yeah.
He won two.
He won one back to back. Yeah.
He won back to back MVP, and he wasn't the face of the league because I think then people really weren't ready for it. But after Giannis and now Jokic, like, people are just used to the idea that your best player doesn't have to be American.
But it also means the producers of all the talk shows have got to tell their hosts, you're going to have to watch Oklahoma City. You can't just watch the Lakers. You know, you can't just watch Miami. You're going to have to see it. Like, I'd love to see if Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I think he's going to win the MVP, but it's still, you know, will the entire NBA entertainment infrastructure, will they lean into it as well?
I think we're past it. I do. I think that with Luka and Dallas is a big market, but Milwaukee's not a big market.
Nope.
And Denver's not a big market. And both of their best players are international players. I think we're past it now. If anything, I think the idea that the player has to be American now feels kind of old-fashioned.
It does. It does feel old-fashioned.
It's almost like UFC, like you don't need your champs to be American for them to be interesting.
But if I do watch, you know, when I see on the screens who they're talking about, it quite often is still going to be, you know, when in doubt, just talk LeBron.
Well, that's true, and I think that's partially legacy and partially just big city bias.
Yeah.
If you listen to The Ringer and Bill Simmons, you would think that the league was 40 to 50% Celtics and then everybody else.
Yeah.
And that's just the bias people bring to it. The LeBron conversation gets interesting every month or so. It's an unending, but you know, Golden State maybe made a trade pitch for him and then, ooh, and that gets Stephen A going for a month. You know what's interesting? I was listening to this one pod on the Ringer podcast network, which is really good. Derek Thompson's Plain English. Have you ever heard that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like it. And he was doing a prediction thing with Simmons and he said something very interesting about sports, which was we're entering a phase now where the sports fan consumes tons of sports content.
Without watching the sports. Yeah.
And I thought about my own life because I grew up watching the sports, but I really don't as much as I used to. I still do, but not as obsessively. I don't need to watch every period, but I'll just listen to Jonas and Myrtle talk about it on The Athletic or Dangle's pod or whatever. Like there's any number of places where I can go and I can spend 30 minutes with them or I can spend 7 hours watching the Leafs maybe win or not.
Also, part of that is, it's a good thing you're not as obsessive as you used to because, again, you are married. You have a kid. You know, your parents get older, you have different responsibilities. So I think that's part of the natural life cycle. But no, they do bring up a great point that we enjoy the soap opera of it. I mean, certainly more in basketball than other sports, but, you know, it is an easy way. And also, we have more ways to get 20, 30 minute chunks of really smart stuff delivered to our eyeballs or earballs than what we did 20 years ago.
It's an interesting conundrum for the leagues. Because people talk about their product so much. But when you think about what most people really rally around, I'm going to create a chart of four in no particular order except for the last one. Podcasts about the sport.
Yep.
Gambling.
Mm-hmm.
Fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
The actual game.
Yeah.
The first three, I don't know how to rank them, but I know that the last one is the actual game in terms of importance in your daily life.
Yeah.
You do gambling a lot on your show.
Yep.
Right. And that's just the future. I mean, it's the present, you know, it's a multi-billion dollar industry. It's growing at an incredible rate. The entire North American gambling complex. It's fun. It's interesting. It's a dopamine hit for young guys. It's a lot of different things. But what it isn't is it's not sports.
No,
it's something about sports, but it's not sports.
Oh, yeah. It's all the adjacent stuff.
So if you're the league, what do you do, though? Because you own this incredible IP, but your number one commodity is your game, which is now becoming the least interesting thing about your league.
I don't think the leagues care because they have now streaming services competing with traditional media to buy the next media, you know, for the next media rights deal. So I think that's always still their number one thing.
But LiveGate still matters.
And by the way, LiveGate usually does, you know, for most teams does very well, and TV revenue is only going to go up and up and up.
Well, I don't know, because the regional sports networks are all dying, and that's a lot of what people say Cuban got out of the business with the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah.
He was like one of the most active owners in the league, and then he suddenly sold his majority stake. And a lot of people say it's because he looked in the future and said, that TV money ain't going to be there in the future.
It's that one, yeah, that one's above my pay grade, but I am fascinated, especially on the baseball side of things, because baseball requires it the most, because you have 162 games, and, you know, you're seeing, yeah, there's bankruptcies that have been going on with that.
Look at the way that the radio broadcast over the last 10 years for the Jays went from cultural institution to something that's also an offer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I'm not even disparaging the people who work on it because they can only do the best job they can do. But in terms, like it was a part of our cultural lives, the idea, and this going back to the beginning of the Jays, but even as early as 10 years ago, the ball game was always on. And now it just isn't. And Sportsnet clearly doesn't give a shit about it. They're ready to not send guys on the road.
Yeah.
You know, they're simulcasting. It's just, you know.
And we, and you know, fair and balanced, we see that at TSN as well. It, well, it does,
well, not with the Jays, but no, in other areas.
No, no,
yes.
Yeah, with other sports. I do wonder what it'll be 10 years from now in terms of how we consume sports. You know, if it's not traditional talk radio, there's always going to be an appetite. People are going to want the podcast, want to find people to help them consume sports.
The number one thing for so many years was to actually go to the game.
Yeah.
The idea that you could go to the game was the most incredible thing. It used to be a lot cheaper, so more ordinary people could do it. When I was a kid, we had a friend who had Grays, like at the Maple Leaf Gardens. They had season's tickets, so we would often sit up in the Grays. None of us were rich.
Yeah.
It was just a thing you had. Now you have to own a company to even have a sniff at the top sections.
It's crazy. Like, Raptor tickets are crazy expensive.
The TFC started off as affordable and quickly became unaffordable. Only the Argos.
Only the Argos. And actually, I went to a hockey game the other day.
Oh, the Marlies?
No, Maple Leafs. But oh, cool. I didn't pay for it. You know, I was given a ticket. And I'll say this. I don't mind the quiet. If you want to be quiet, that's fine. What bothers me is people behind me talked about everything that had nothing to do with sports or hockey for the entire game. What's going on with their kids this weekend? Someone bought their father's home and is renovating it. And I'm like, could you? It was against St. Louis. It was a great game. The first game, though, Morgan Riley, and there was no Tavares and no Marner, and they killed them. It was a great game over the Blues. And they're talking about nothing about hockey. That's the only thing that annoyed me.
I'm convinced that increasingly the live event is just going to be for rich people. And I know this was like hardly a, Thunderbolt, but even think about the Apple Vision Pro. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about how it'll apply to sports. And you wear it and it feels like you're really there. Think about how 4K changed how much we wanted to just stay home and
yeah.
watch sports versus fight traffic and find parking and spend $20 for a hot dog. And you know, imagine what the Apple Vision Pro is going to do when it's, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth generation.
Yeah, that's
as the great Dennis Miller, when he used to be great, once mm-hmm. said, when they create alternative reality and it makes Bill the Welder feel like he can have sex with Claudia Schiffer at home, it's going to make crack look like Sanka.
Yep. Also, the fact you use Claudia Schiffer, that sort of...
dates the joke.
It dates it, but it calibrates it to exactly where it is. You are right about the just how expensive it is to go to a game. Like, it is for the rich, or it's going to be for people who aren't rich. It's going to be such a treat. It's not going to be, say, six times a year. It's once a year. It's Wednesday, and it's against the Coyotes.
I described it to a friend as it's going to be the way travel used to be in North America. When we were growing up, traveling was kind of like something people did, but it wasn't cheap. If you had to get on a plane and go somewhere, like families saved all year to go on their week vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And you did it. And a lot of times people drove. Sometimes they flew. But the idea of going to Europe, like when I was growing up, you know, you grew up in a different neighborhood than I did. But nobody went to Europe.
No.
Nobody went to Europe. Like, what is that? Like, who does that? And I kind of feel like sports are going to become that way. Like now, we grew up in an era where lots of people, you go see sports all the time, live sports. But I think increasingly, generation after generation, it's going to be further and further away, which is again going to devalue the actual game. So this brings me to the question, we almost answered it before I asked the question,
ooh,
which is, what are you going to do when all the TV and all sports is on streamers? Because it's tech and you hate that.
Yeah, I do fear it. Like you talked about Apple Vision.
Apple Vision Pro.
Yeah, yeah, I know vaguely what that is. I'm going to not be getting...
You do have your Acer computer.
I have my Acer computer, same Focusrite mixer. I'm going to be one of the last. And the real loser will be my twin brother, Josh, who's going to have to set it up and explain it to me.
He's your IT guy.
He's my IT guy. And also... I don't have a partner who's good at it either. Amy's horrible at tech as well. It's the two of us. Like the other, I fixed the TV, and the only thing I fixed was I needed to change the batteries in the remote.
I have a kid
yeah.
because they understand how tech works, or a partner who does understand tech. Because I'm as bad as you are.
Yeah,
but I surround myself with people who can drive,
smart, yes,
and people who know tech.
Yeah, like when you said fighting traffic, you've never fought traffic.
I've been angry at traffic. Yeah, is that the same thing? Yeah. From the passenger seat.
Yeah, it's passive.
You know, I work at Apple, and so I see how sports increasingly is becoming part of the dialogue. You'll do an all-hands call, and sports all of a sudden are creeping into the all-hands all more and more. And, you know, they sponsored the Super Bowl halftime show, which is still about music at this point. But the incredible investment in MLS, and you're going to see more and more baseball.
Wrestling on Netflix,
yeah.
Amazon Thursday night one. NFL, a playoff game that if you were in the NFL playoff game in the States, you needed Amazon to watch it or Apple, one of those two.
It's interesting how the Barkley factors into these negotiations because TNT, I don't care, but I do care about Barkley.
Yep.
And I would watch more games just because that crew is doing it, Ernie and the guys. And, you know, I think the TSN hockey crew are a bit like this. I actually will sometimes, when I have the game on tape, shuttle through parts of the period because it's boring and then just see what's up on the quiz.
Yep.
Because
oh, yeah.
I love the way. But it goes back to my original point about sometimes talk about the game is more interesting than the game itself because they distill it down to the hits.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. The first period in one of the last Leafs games was horrible. But and then I did the same thing. I'm working the next day and I fast forward through it. But I want to hear, I want to hear what Duffy and O'Neill and maybe Mike Johnson or Dreger or Cheryl Pounder. I want to hear what they have to say.
My dad has a graduated system where he records all of the games in 30. And if he feels the team is doing enough to earn his trust, he'll start watching the whole thing.
Smart.
Like he says with the Raptors, they're still in his in 30 penalty box.
As they should be.
So here's my last question for yeah. sports, which is Keith Pelley, our old boss, is going to be the new head of MLSE.
Yeah.
And when he takes over, a change at the top is always really interesting because all the things that happened before come with their own baggage and their own inertia. But when you have the fresh start, you've got someone who just looks at the ledger and makes an objective decision. Do I like this administration or not? If the Leafs don't do well, you got to feel like this is Shanny's last ride. But Masai. That's an interesting one, because for years, he was thought of as, if not the best executive, certainly like top three, top five in all of the NBA. Plus, there was a cultural factor. He represented the Raptors in the NBA in such a, and continues to, dignified way. Giants of Africa, he's an impressive figure.
Obama was at a Raptor game in the playoffs.
Not
Obama,
for the team.
Not for the team, but for Masai.
Right.
That... Of course, that still doesn't lead to any free agents wanting to come here, but there is this cachet with having Masai here.
People talked about, you know, when the contract was coming up, will he just jump to the league and be one of the, you know, power players within mm-hmm. the league itself? So Pelley comes in and he looks at the last few years, which honestly haven't been great.
No.
He held on to Pascal too long.
Mm-hmm.
He held on to Fred too long. He probably held on to OG too long. He made a trade for Jakob Poeltl and gave up a first rounder for a guy who's a serviceable center.
Yeah, serviceable center.
He's a good yeah. center. He's okay. Yeah. But you gave on a team that's rebuilding. So now you have a serviceable center versus a first rounder. Like, what would you rather have now today?
Yeah.
And there's just been, you know, the trade with OG. Like, I think everybody was excited at first, but, you know, it was quickly going to be.
We'll see. We'll see. And by the way, OG Anunoby's a little banged up.
Yeah, so I was going to say that one will look worse when
he's hurt. The Siakam one looks worse.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And 2 years ago, you know, you and I were saying, you got to trade this guy mm-hmm. because the team is trending down. So there's just been some whiffs. And the team sucks. And there's so little energy and enthusiasm. And even saying Scotty Barnes is the guy you're going to build around. Is he? Is he that guy? It's not a no-brainer.
No. No.
So does Masai survive this season? If you were Keith Pelley, do you come in and look at this and never mind and just assess this and say, he hasn't done that great a job?
He hasn't. Remember off the top of your talking about how like the Connor McDavid, you stitch enough greatness.
Yeah.
I think Masai still gets another year or two because he stitched enough greatness in Denver, stitched enough greatness in Toronto. I also believe that his job is harder than anyone else in the NBA. There was a report that there was a deal in place for Damian Lillard to come to the Raptors, and the Raptors would not have to get rid of Siakam, Scotty Barnes, or OG Anunoby. And if you're Damian Lillard, you're all about winning. Now, maybe you can find better places, sure. But Damian Lillard, in that organization, with those three guys, you can win the East with that. And Lillard said no because it's Canada.
Mm-hmm.
That's also what Masai, like, if that deal happens, if Damian Lillard is like, fuck yeah, those guys are really good. That guy's an all-star. That guy's burgeoning. Those guys are going to help me defensively. I don't have to carry the load defensively. I'm going to go there. It's the face of an entire nation. We saw when they won in 19, the crowd was crazy at the parade, and he still said no because of geography. So I'll always give Masai, anyone in the Raptors, a bit of benefit of the I'll give them a little more leeway because they have it harder than any of the other organizations.
It's a degree of difficulty that's a step up.
Yes.
I like to describe it as swimming in jeans. Mm-hmm. There's just a downward yes. pull that is yes. hard to overcome.
Denim, not a good idea. if you are in a busy river, I would not recommend denim.
And it's never the same river twice.
Yeah.
Especially if you're wearing jeans.
Yes.
I think you're right about this. And if I had to guess, I would say that Shanny is probably on pretty thin ice.
Yes, I would agree with that. Yep.
Pretty thin ice. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing with Dubas, the reporting has never fully come out, but it's been whispered enough that it's just a board play. The board did the same kind of negotiation with Masai. They hate it when someone who doesn't win pushes back and wants more. They wanted to get rid of Masai. I'm sure they wanted to get rid of Dubas. And Shanny was sort of like, he's my guy. Wait, what's that? Okay, he's not my guy. But that politics won't play here because you got a new guy up at the top
who's
dealing with the board. So I think Shanny's on thin ice, and I agree with you about Masai. I think he's got 2 to 3 years to rebuild this thing. Mm-hmm. But then it gets me to a point, and I wanted to throw a comparison to you. I think Scotty Barnes was an all-star mostly because the league did the Raptors a favor.
Yeah, injury replacement. And listen.
And it could have been a bunch of other guys. And I'm sure they picked Scotty because they're like, we kind of owe Masai one for the way we fucked up the whole thing at the end of the 2019 championship and
COVID. Tampa. Yeah.
Just so many things. So I feel like Scotty's a borderline all-star.
Yes, that is what he is right now. He's a borderline all-star.
Yeah.
He's an injury replacement all-star.
Fred Van Vliet was a borderline all-star.
Yes.
Say I'm going to rebuild around Fred.
Yeah.
The question is ceiling, and here's what I want to throw to you, my comparison. People want to believe that he'll be Kawhi. I think it's going to be closer to he'll be Chris Bosh for us. Chris Bosh was a great player. He was, you know, potentially an all-star, like certainly an all-star, potentially a Hall of Famer.
He'll get in.
You know, I think he'll get in.
He'll get in.
He needed other players around him to be a champion. He was not the guy, ironically also drafted at the number 4 position, and he'll be one of the great all-time Raptors. But nobody will remember that time as a great time for the Raptors. They were good enough to make a first round and get knocked out. And he was a great player on a so-so team that really needed to go somewhere else to become a full champion.
But that also just speaks to the cruelty of supply and demand in the NBA. So Scottie Barnes is going to become one of those guys. Well, there's never more than 10. Denver won it last year with a those guy. Milwaukee won it with a those guy. Golden State's done it often with multiple, sometimes as many 3 of those guys. Miami, Wade, LeBron, and Bosch. It's the most predictable thing. There's about, if you want to know who's going to win the title, do they have one of those guys? And there's about 8 those guys.
You know when you go to ESPN or The Ringer or whatever and they rank players and you just keep scrolling till you see someone that you want to see and the first 10 go by and you're like, nah, I know, I kind of agree. And then it's 10 to 15, you're like, well, if they love them, they could put them there. But really, you know, they're going to be between 15 and 30. Mm-hmm. To me, Barnes is a 15 to 30 guy.
Yeah.
On every league ranking for his whole career, he's going to land somewhere between 15 to 30, which is awesome, which is probably where you would have put Chris Bosh.
Yeah.
Somewhere between 15 and 30. And if he has a nice long career, we'll remember him as a great player.
2 years ago, I could summarize what the Raptors need in one sentence. They need one player who's clearly better than Siakam. It could be that way, just replace Siakam with Barnes. And Siakam made some all-star teams, made an all-NBA team. But if you want to win it all in the title, you need Kawhi Leonard. And there's only one Kawhi Leonard, and he's right now with Paul George and James Harden.
Can I take a quick sidebar here?
Because
at the beginning of the year, we talked about this, and then we took our big, long hiatus. But my greatest fear for this NBA season is that the Clippers are going to win.
Oh, I know. Oh, fuck.
I hate the Clippers.
Yes.
And then when they went and got James Harden, they became even worse.
Yeah.
And I hate the Clippers for what they did to the Raptors, stealing Kawhi Leonard, but also just stalking him.
Just stalking him.
Like in clear defiance of all NBA appropriate conduct.
The stalking one bothers me. The stealing, Kawhi plays the family card. His family's there. It's like, God damn it. You get the moral high ground.
100%. But Steve Ballmer basically like being Lawrence like the CIA.
Lawrence Frank hanging out at all the Raptor games. Yes.
Oh my God. Like some creepy guy at the schoolyard. Hey, yeah. Kawhi, you want some candy?
Yeah.
It was just so gross. And so I hate them. And then, you know, I've got nothing against Paul George necessarily. But then when they get James Harden and Russell Westbrook, it's like the Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
It's like some kind of Legion of Doom. It's all the players that you just don't like are on one team.
Yeah. But then, like, I don't hate Westbrook anymore because he accepted the role at coming off the bench. But it's Harden. In the end, it comes down to Harden. So I need like in the first round of the playoffs, I need Phoenix to face the Clippers because that means either Durant or Harden are out. So I'm like, okay, good. One of my supervillains is out of the league. You know?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You know, I know you hate Durant. I love him. I still think when we look back at the I win trade Scotty Barnes for Kevin Durant, that seems kind of insane.
But yeah.
It was insane back in the day. But I'm so afraid that the Clippers are going to win. And they look so good.
I know.
And I don't want to cheer for injury. Like, that's just gross. There's a line in being a fan. Like, you can hope a team loses. You can hope they get humiliated.
Yeah.
But you can't cheer for guys to get hurt.
No.
But it might be the only thing that stops them.
How about I wouldn't hate a nagging hamstring during a 12-day period in May. How about that? Is that? I don't want anything torn, broken. I don't want you to miss much time. But if Harden and Paul George have a nagging hamstring on, say, from May 27th to June 4th, that's not the worst thing in the world.
Okay, I'm going to throw out something, and we're going to wrap up soon. But
yeah.
I think that as we go towards the Leafs trade deadline, you think, okay, Chris Tanev, sure. I don't know. Whatever. Yeah. Hanifin, he's a rental. I don't know. Pareko, that'd be great.
That'd be great.
He's 30.
Yeah.
And he's expensive.
Yeah.
So who knows how that's going to play out. But the offseason, I think, is where the Raptors are going to try to make some big play. Trae Young, yay or nay? Would you gut the team to make a twosome of Scottie Barnes and Trae Young, which means Quickly would probably go on.
That's fine, because you're not gutting anything incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
but
no,
do you feel like you could build around that?
You know what? I think maybe you could, because Scottie Barnes is really good defensively. Yeah. So then it's like you can handle, you know, it's like in a relationship, one person's got a horrible sense of direction.
But or one person doesn't drive.
One person doesn't drive.
One person doesn't do IT.
But the other person has to. You know, it's like one person always remembers everyone's names while the other person doesn't remember a face. So you can do that. If it's with Scottie Barnes or Trae Young, yeah, you could do that.
Final thought. I want to, and we're not going to do it today, but I want to go back to this idea where you pick a wine for the week.
Yep.
And I pick a food for the week. Mm-hmm. I've been cooking a lot lately. I really made it a goal to try and make something delicious once a day. And the other day I had the funniest cooking day. Because I bought chicken wings, I bought halal wings, and they were all one piece. So like the drum and the wing were all connected, you know, and it actually looks like a wing. And I made them, honestly, the best wings I ever made.
Mm.
Like they just turned out great. And at the same time, I made those Pillsbury dough croissants.
Yeah.
And it was the worst thing I ever cooked. It was just like a ball of goo, and it was horrible. And I wanted to ask you, is there a food that you will cook, like a really schlocky, terrible food that you know is filled with like terrible chemicals, but you just will park all of your reservations? Because I looked at the ingredients of the croissant.
Don't do that.
It looked like a chemistry exam.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
It was just deranged.
Biophysate and
palm oil was the most natural thing in it.
Yeah, you don't want oil really in any of your ingredients.
But is there a food that you'll eat that you just don't care how bad it is for you? And I don't want to say fatty foods either.
Yeah. Like I certainly have a sweet tooth. I've got myself an individual portion of tiramisu that was not an individual portion. And my thing is, well, if I eat it earlier in the evening, then it's not as unhealthy for me.
You have time to burn it off.
I've got time. Yeah.
Drink it off.
I'll just let me just wash this down with a lot of Chianti. And there we go. Just right out of the system. So yeah, sweet. I will do the sweets.
I think for me, it's the slushy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
The blue slushy.
Yeah.
Because blue is bad.
It's unnatural.
It really is. Like, nothing should glow.
Yeah.
Your food should never glow.
Yeah, anything that's the color of windshield wiper fluid probably shouldn't be
consumed. Is that antifreeze?
Yeah.
No, it's my snack.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, like, it's funny because we're conditioned and we're being trained to think, like, oh, I've got to eat this at this time and I need flax seeds and blah, blah, blah. But every once in a while we say, fuck that.
Yeah.
I'm going to have something terrible. I also like looking at the ingredients of certain chips, like for sour cream and onion, where you know the sour cream and onion has neither cream nor onion in it.
Yes, I don't do that. Ooh, here's one of my tricks is if I'm going to do that, I'm going to clean up everything and whatever the shameful stuff I put in the garbage, I'm going to put down the chute because I'm in a condo here so that when I go to bed, there is no trace of the decadent life I have done. Same thing, the wine bottles, empty, put away, the wine glasses are clean. Because if everything in the kitchen feels clean, it feels I didn't sully my body.
That's an outstanding psychological bullshit trick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's really good. Yeah. Nothing bad happened here. It's like, you know, if there was a murder
yeah.
and the body was there, you'd be like, Jesus Christ, what happened here? But if the room is clean.
Exactly.
Did it ever really happen?
If you can't lie to yourself, how are you going to lie to others?
There's actually an evolutionary theory from psychologists that speculate Ooh. That we learn to lie so that we can balance that in our own heads. We learn to lie to ourselves by lying to others.
Well, yeah, because, you know, then you got to lie to yourself so then you don't have to deal with the big picture of life and death
reality.
And never exist. Yeah,
seriously.
Reality, yeah.
Climate change.
Yeah. Hmm.
You know, if you really thought about what your day could be like, you would never get out of bed. You have to lie to yourself about the possible good scenarios.
I'm just going to stick with the tiramisu.
I think it's a good idea.
Good to have you back, Bob.
Matt, I am so happy to be in your incredibly clean apartment, which makes me believe that there was probably a murder here.
There wasn't. A couple bottles of wine. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.